Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Today's show kicks off the draft season officially with our 10-1 countdown of quarterbacks. So a position, maybe the Ravens won't take a player, but certainly they possibly could. In fact, I would make the argument they might be the only team in the AFC North who's looking for a quarterback. But here to discuss their guys and have that 10-1 countdown with me in the format you're used to is Jordan Coe. Jordan, how you doing?
Good, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure to talk football with you, as you know, Jordan. And let's go ahead and talk about a little bit about this quarterback class, but maybe we take a moment or two in terms of needs for the Ravens. Obviously, the Ravens lost Tyler Huntley, you know, to the Browns this offseason. They re-signed Josh Johnson, who obviously is the long-term answer at quarterbacks. So they'll have him, you know, for the next 8 years or so. Now, seriously, Josh Johnson is, what, 38, 39 years old now? He's a one-year Band-Aid to this current situation. So the Ravens will have to figure out at what point they draft a quarterback or find another one from a cast-off pile or whatever it might be. Is this the year they draft a quarterback?
I doubt it. I think that there are too many other needs that they've got lined up. I mean, when you're looking at the long-term projection against the cap for the team, I think that's the, you know, we've heard you and I and others have heard DaCosta talk about how he was setting up to bank picks in this year, next year, and the following year, and that they knew that they were going to have to take a lot of shots because, and this is my translation of what he was saying, because they were going to need to find starters that were going to be playing on rookie contracts down the line as Lamar's contract got bigger and bigger. And as they looked at wanting to keep some of the other guys they might've potentially had. And so if you're firing from the holster, so to speak, you know, in terms of trying to catch guys that are going to ultimately be starters, then you're going to have to take players that aren't quarterbacks. And so maybe there are undrafted guys at quarterback that the Ravens can look at, do something similar like they did with the trade at the end of last year. I think it's probably unlikely, especially given that the Ravens needs, particularly on the offensive line and at pass rusher, that they're not going to take guys that they think are both projects and guys that they think are going to be contributors from those positions. And it's just going to absorb a lot of the draft capital from my perspective.
That could well be. And it's not like there won't be a guy they could try on a UDFA contract at quarterback. We'll see how deep that goes, but there are some possibilities and there's some other guys that, you know, I certainly wouldn't waste a draft pick on among the top 15 or so quarterbacks in this draft. Who I just don't think are worth it. Very interesting draft in terms of a highly barbelled set of quarterbacks. There's almost no one in the middle. There's almost no one who's around three or four guy to me. And I know we'll discuss this as we go through, but this is really one name I have on my list who's probably around three or around four guy. Everybody else, I think, either is a day one or early day two pick, which I basically think favors the Ravens, by the way, could really stuff a lot of the top 29 before they pick.
Yeah. I mean, we're hoping to see what the top, I mean, depending on who you have set accordingly, five guys go off the board before, you know, up to six, right? Before the Ravens end up taking their draft pick, the more, the merrier you want to see these draft picks. Also, you get the leverage of the Ravens being in the inverse position of the one they took advantage of with Lamar Jackson, where maybe someone's willing to pay a little bit more because that option year for quarterbacks carries a little bit more value than other positions. You're just regardless of how much that's going to cost and how much quarterbacks cost, you're going to want to be able to exercise that option if you have a guy that hits. So, you know, if we're talking about Penix or Nix that are falling towards the end of that round, maybe there's somebody that wants to come back up and get them, and that's going to be to the advantage of the Ravens.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. And I think those are the two names. And if number five is drafted at 29, I think that might be the ideal situation for the Ravens to trade for that last pick. Cause it's a fairly long fall down after that in terms of what you get in terms of a possible early return on that player. And we're going to go through a lot of this as we go. We'll be thinking about who might make a reasonable backup in later rounds. By the way, just going to plug the watch party for right now, and we'll be going all three nights of the draft, but in particular in the first round, our coverage and our viewing party is all about how does this affect the Baltimore Ravens. How did this pick help the Ravens, hurt the Ravens, change the division in some way, not go against the Ravens' need, or conversely take away from a need that the Ravens really have, and now force them to reshuffle their board and decide whether they want a PPA player or whatever. But that's how we look at draft night. We don't do a lot of special interest. We don't do a lot of other stuff. That's what we're interested in. So if you're interested in that kind of a party, that's a good one to come and watch with us. It's an intimate gathering, lots of opportunity for questions and hand raising, great panel of people on the show always. So really appreciate it if you folks will log in and watch the draft with us, have some fun. So let's start. We do a 10-1 countdown here. And Jordan, I'm going to let you go with number 10 first. And to the degree we have overlap here, I'll just respond to what you've got and we'll move on.
Yeah. So Jordan Travis is my 10 guy. Toolsy, athletic, winner, gritty, kind of Anthony Richardson, super late in terms of kind of not great mechanics in terms of his throws, but can do some stuff out of structure. He gets onto my list because I think that these are the type of guys ultimately that the NFL is looking at in terms of backups. I think everybody needs to be a little bit prepared as the evolution of quarterback continues to happen. And I think when we get to the top of this draft, there's definitely a guy that is more in that, mobile athletic type. And so I think you get the ability to take a flyer on guys like Jordan Travis, who stock might have gone down a little bit also because of, his injury, gruesome injury, really, really brutal, but also just didn't get a chance to play in some of those top tier games against top tier competition one more time that he might have been, that might have helped push him up into that kind of mid-tier draft stock that you talked about this draft lacking.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly for a team that can afford to have a redshirt year at quarterback, and you can afford to have that if the guy can do some work. And I think that Travis is going to be in a position where he can at least work with a quarterback's coach, learn a system, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, he can do any kind of classroom work. But the question is, can he really learn to execute on spot? He's my number. I think I have him at number 9 here. I do have a set of concerns about him. And the first is very small hands at 9 inches. And by the way, the couple guys in this class are in the same thing. I know you guys are going to be get on me for arm length and offensive tackles, and this hand size is a real big problem for quarterbacks. You often have a trouble throwing a tighter spiral, which is the B level problem with small hands. The A level problem is sacks have a much higher percentage of fumbles that accrue from them. And you want the example from Ravens history, it's Tony Banks. Jordan Travis has 23 fumbles in 49 college games. Not all those were on sacks, of course. He had fumbles with the snap and whatnot, but that's a large number of fumbles. He's not a tremendous rushing threat, but he is a rushing threat. Who had 1,950 yards in college, kind of a pedestrian 4.7 yards per carry for a quarterback is not great. You look at who he is personally. I think he projects to an RPO heavy scheme, which kind of gets at some of the comments you were making earlier.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect encapsulation. And, I hadn't read about his hand size, but I do think that that's an issue, especially at the NFL level, especially when you're looking at how guys play in the latter parts of the season, when the weather starts to get bad, when it gets colder. It's not that it can't be overcome. And so maybe if you're looking at him as a flyer or as an undrafted free agent type because he's drifting, then you can overlook it because it's a 7th round pick or it's a guy that you're just bringing in and you can find out whether or not he can overcome it.
Yeah. I got a little bit more about him. His completion percentage in college is not what you'd want in a draftable quarterback, despite the fact he was 20-2 with touchdowns and interceptions last year. People are going to gravitate to that. And they're going to say, oh, look at this. And, you know, led to a pretty good overall passer rating and whatnot. But the truth of the matter is that the 20 touchdowns is not an impressive touchdown per game performance for an ACC quarterback. Draftable ACC quarterback. Let me be clear about that. It is impressive for an ACC quarterback. He had a lot of yak amongst what he did. Not a really high average depth of completion, not a dot, but average depth of completion. Was really helped out with that in the FSU offense. One of the other things is that he doesn't really have the great velocity on his throws. And I think that is something that is going to come into question more as there's more effective pressure against him is how does that turn into things. And he's been afforded the luxury at Florida State of being very careful with the football on his throws, not necessarily, you know, in terms of having it dislodged, but being very careful of it on his throws. And when he does that, he's going to have to make more tough decisions, more tough reads, more tough window throws at the NFL level, throwing between level 2 and 3, where windows close very quickly. And if you are, you know, focused on the trailing player and the differential speed, you lose that window closing. I'm thinking Geno Stone and Joe Burrow, that specific play is going to come up a couple times during this QB analysis, because I think there's a couple of guys who arm strength is really a question, and it's one of the things you really can't afford to be short on.
Yeah, either they have to have shown tremendous anticipation over their time as a quarterback, and I can't testify to having watched enough of him to say whether he has kind of that elite level anticipation. But that you're going to need that if you're the Brock Purdy's of the world to be able to compensate for that arm strength. Drew Brees, others. I mean, there are guys that have succeeded, but they've got to show that talent.
They either have elite accuracy like Brees. Brees is one of the most accurate quarterbacks of all time, or they play in a structure where they can get rid of the ball so quickly with multiple fakes, and they're so in tune with it. And that's like an older Brady or Manning. That's what they fall back into, is they can manipulate a defense so quickly within those first 2 seconds, twice sometimes, to then throw a slant pass, you know. And I just associate a lot of that. I wouldn't want that as the starting point for a new quarterback, other than a guy who's taking a flyer on in a very late round. I wouldn't want this as the starting point for a new quarterback. It's not an exciting way. It's not an exciting constraint to have on your offense to be starting with that. All right. We move on to my number 10 guy. All right. Yeah. Let's talk about Michael Pratt of Tulane. You know, another guy, I'm not really crazy about him. I have him ranked lower than Travis, who I had at number 9. He'll be 23 in September, which actually makes him one of the younger quarterbacks in this class. There's not a lot of young guys in here. It's a lot of guys who are either 24 already or will be 24 very soon. He won't be 23 until September. Here's my problem with Pratt is he doesn't look like a great athlete at this. He looks like a very coached up player to me. A guy who is able to manipulate defenses some, pretty good in terms of his footwork, pretty good in terms of his reads. That takes him beyond some marginal arm strength that he has, but I think it also limits his upside at the NFL. I've got some other things to say, but just initial comments from you.
Yeah, same take. I mean, a Tulane team that he was able to lead to some pretty good success as well. I mean, worth noting that not a recognizable, not recognizable, but not of nearly of note as they have been the last 2 years. And so you always, you know, in football, you always have to take a look at the quarterback and wonder what the influence of that is. Obviously, they've had some other good players, though, that have come out sharp, obviously, in Tennessee, being a big one from 2 years ago. Obviously, Spears, much bigger impact on that team overall. But when you've got a guy that's able to help keep all those things together, the way the quarterbacks are kind of looked at in terms of a leadership spot in kind of a team overall, and having a guy that can be coached up like that. I mean, I start to wonder how much the NFL is starting to look at guys like Pratt or the coachable types like Brock Purdy as the example, as being the kind of guys that you want as those flyer guys again too, right? So do I want a guy that can have some of that athletic talent or, you know, looks the part, so to speak, but maybe, you know, the competition that they're playing against matters less, or they have a really good wide receiver and they're just kind of throwing it up to them. Like, we'll talk about, you know, another quarterback later that at the top end of this, that I think there are some concerns where the system, the players impact him more. And so you're looking for a guy that's coachable and a guy that you want to keep around, a guy that's not going to make trouble, a guy that you can do something with, and they come in late in the games too. You know, I think that I don't look at Tyler Huntley as a loss for the Ravens, because ultimately, when he ended up coming in exchange for Lamar Jackson, the Ravens didn't get anything out of it. Now, they didn't change the system wholly in terms of what Lamar was doing, because he had some of those aspects, but he was not successful in that and didn't seem like there was any kind of like, okay, now that Huntley's in, this is what we're going to try. And then you get caught in purgatory where you've just got a guy playing quarterback and the rest of your team then has to be so good to supersede. You know, you've got to be the early 2000 Ravens to get something out of that. Well, I'd rather have a guy that I can be coaching up behind the scenes to be ready to step in and maybe execute two or three very specific things. I think maybe someone like Michael Pratt can give you a little bit of appeal in that sense.
You know, I like that argument. I really do, in terms of being a guy who could do something different than that. Maybe that team has already put on film with their even a star quarterback like Lamar Jackson, that you could coach him to do something different. In fact, and I think that was a lot of the problem with Huntley was, you know, he's a very linear runner, didn't have any wiggle at all in terms of his ability to get by anybody. And I think he
couldn't jump over a pile.
Yeah, you and I have that bad shared memory together. But anyway,
sorry.
I wiped that memory completely off my mind. Went to that game in Cincinnati, and there was a charge that showed up for $3 from a hotel, but it wasn't clear what it was on my credit card. And I'm like, this is crap. I didn't make any charge there. And you know, where was this? And they told me it was in Cincinnati. And it said, it looks like it might have been from a vending machine. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I completely blocked that out of my mind. All right. Anyway, awful. You know, one of the good things about Pratt, I thought, was good up and down throws. There's a few quarterbacks in this draft who have it, and there's other quarterbacks who don't have it in this draft. But Pratt is one of the guys who can make those touch throws between level two and level three. Part of that is arm strength. I think part of it may also be that if he could not do that, he probably wouldn't be on a football field, because, you know, the arm strength is not where you need it to be, and that would lead to a lot of interceptable balls. Still has some turnover-worthy throws. PFF had him with a fairly high turnover-worthy rate. It's one of the things. You watch highlight videos of a quarterback, you don't see the percentage of turnover-worthy throws. So no matter how much kind of film you watch, you still have to look at stats like that to try and figure out, does this player make sense or not? Because there's no one counting, for example, drops for a wide receiver or making me a nice video of his 11 drops that he had in his senior season and why these are connected or not. You might get that once in a blue moon. You might get something like that. Most of the time, you have to figure that out. It's easy to find the 11 interceptions and find what they had meaning for a cornerback and find out what they had in common. But to find the 11 drops, you don't get that. That sort of stuff. So also a guy with kind of elfin hands. He's at 9.25 inches. That's a little better. The guy who had really small hands and it kind of hurt him throughout his career from being the pick that he was Alex Smith. Remember, Alex Smith was drafted number one overall the year Aaron Rodgers was 24 or 25, whatever it was. But one of the big knocks that came out as soon as he got there was that his hands are too small. And it's like, what, you didn't know this before? I don't know if he did. If he asked not to be measured on that thing at the combine, he said, I'm not doing measurements or whatever. He's a smart man, because his draft stock would have suffered from it, I'm sure.
I feel like I remember hearing that before the draft, but that also could just be like retroactively. Like, I had the conversation about Alex Smith's hand size got out of hand. I think, you know, For what it was certainly a drawback and not an advantage, but like, it became a thing. Now, I guess Kenny Pickett's the equivalent guy that is really gotten picked on, you know, for the same thing. And I don't think Kenny Pickett's problems, unlike Alex Smith, I think the size of his hands were one of his bigger problems. Kenny Pickett has a lot of other problems that prevent him from being a pro quality quarterback.
But the difference there is, you know, with Kenny Pickett, you're drafting a 700 points of JJ value. And with Alex Smith, it's 3,000. So, you know, if you're spending 4.5 times the draft capital, you expect to get a better return on that player. And it's just one of the real strange ones. All right. What else? That's good enough on Michael Pratt for me. So he's my number 10 guy. And he's a guy, I think, if you're looking for texture in the offense, if you're looking for what you talking about, Michael Pratt could be a guy who could back up Lamar Jackson and do some different things. He's not going to be running an RPO offense in the same way, but I think he could come in and do some different things. He could take advantage of what you have at tight end. He could turn your offense into a more thoroughly under center play action game. There's probably a few things he can do for you that'd be different, but I, if the Ravens want to take a flyer on him in round 5 or 6, I'd be fine.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more under center to tight end running sets in this upcoming year. And if we don't, I'm going to be upset. I know you don't feel as strongly about that as I do, but especially if they're not going to move on from Ricard for the cap space, but they are going to move on from a guy like Morgan Moses. I want to see two tight end sets. I want to see Lamar under center. I think he's proven to be more than adept enough on the naked bootleg, even with that free rusher, to still, at least at the current athleticism level, be able to negate some of that stuff. And if the Ravens aren't running no huddle, 12 personnel going in and out of shotgun and under center with the exact same personnel this upcoming year, then I don't know how they're not seeing it.
Okay. All right. That's an interesting way to go.
That's my soapbox for the night.
Did you have Pratt on your list at all, or was he off?
I did. I actually had him in. I had him at 9.
Okay. You had him at 9. Okay. So now I think we've covered 9 and 10 for each of us, right? So I have Travis Pratt and you have Pratt Travis at 9 and 10. Okay. So who is your number 8 guy?
My number 8 guy is Austin Reed, who a little bit more prototypical, 6'2", good numbers. You know, obviously you got to take Western Kentucky with a grain of salt, but you know, in the 2 years that he played there, over 70 touchdowns, just I think 21 or 22 interceptions. So from a statistical standpoint, obviously playing above the level of everybody in the Western Kentucky's competition was looking at playing against. And I think that they're also a system coming out of Western Kentucky with Bailey Zapp coming in before him, being potentially having some read on decent quarterbacks or guys that at least could be cuspers when they come to the NFL level. And so when you're seeing that kind of performance, having a 40 touchdown year in his junior year, a guy that's worth taking a look at.
Fair enough. Now, you remember, this is the first one we're going to have a significant difference on, and maybe it's not that significant. Austin Reed is a no for me, but he's a no because of the Ravens kind of system and the talents they have. He's also a no because I don't think he fits very well into the prototype NFL offense of you want a quarterback who has some mobility, at least to navigate the pocket, and extended times are not negative, and he can run a little bit. The Austin Reed stats are really damning in terms of his running. 35 rushes, just one missed tackle forced, and 0.8 yakko per play. So he's like the anti Jaden Daniels. We'll get to Jaden Daniels a lot because he's amazing in terms of his yakko. He went 11 for 105 as a scrambler, but that resulted in just 4 first downs. Now, how do you get 105 yards on 11 rushes scrambling the football and only get 4 first downs? Well, the probable reason is you go down short of the sticks and the defense is realizing, you know, exactly how they can manipulate to get you to the ground, or you're running on 3rd and 15 when you shouldn't and you get 11 yards. There could be some reasons, but that's ridiculous in terms of success not relating to first downs. Didn't get sacked a lot because he's the quickest release quarterback or very close to it in this draft at 2.43 time to throw. There's just such a current against a quick read QB offense. And I think it's something that, you know, you really have to grow into over many years. And Manning and Brady earned that right late in their careers when their arms were weaker because they could still manipulate defenders very effectively. And Austin Reed, you know, that's really his game coming out of school. Frankly, it's, you know, Joe Burrow would be the counterexample as a guy who is doing it pretty well early in his career. But I think we're already starting to see Burrow's limitations, you know, bubble up, in, particularly when he plays the Ravens, in terms of always wanting to get the ball out so quickly and to the outside that the Ravens, you know, are very effective at getting it stopped.
Yeah, well, and I think that I didn't really, as we kind of proffered earlier, didn't particularly love any of the quarterbacks in this range. You know, you're not asking for a lot. You want a guy that hasn't seen a lot. His rushing numbers are abysmal. The fact that he had 135 rushes or nearly 135 rushes in his college career with such terrible results is particularly stunning. He's not even getting 11 yards on third and 17. If your average is all the way down at 2.4 and 2.5 over those years. But you know, in this range, you're looking for a guy where these are probably all going to be most likely potentially practice squad quarterbacks, especially with the advent of this new rule coming up this year, where your third quarterback gets to be a practice squad guy that is available on these active days. I think it will be interesting to see whether or not some of these guys in this range and others that we haven't identified so far do ultimately get picked by NFL teams in this range, mm-hmm. because they want to get them to their practice squad. They want them with them in camp over the summer. They want to convince them that being part of the system is going to be to their advantage, even if they're ultimately on the practice squad anyway. They're like, you could do that anywhere, but if you do that here, you're going to be a step or two closer already to being able to potentially get on the field, be the backup quarterback if the right injuries unfortunately happened, you're the starting quarterback. So those guys you might be willing to take a 6 or 7 round pick on one of these guys that you might otherwise in past years made a UDFA guy.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that logic, and it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out under the new rule. To me, Josh Johnson is the perfect guy to keep on your practice squad, but 23 NFL teams may feel like he'd be a good third quarterback because of what he gives. I mean, certainly he's played for almost 23 other teams. So at some point they did. So no, I'm just kidding. But he's you know, he's a guy who could be a lot of teams' number three guy, I think. And we've left Malik Cunningham out of this discussion a little bit. Now, Malik Cunningham got some snaps at wide receiver for the Ravens, never got him at quarterback. I don't know how they were using him at practice or on the scout team or whatever. But do you think he's part of the Ravens plans going forward?
You know, it's hard to say because, you know, I would have felt like he was more likely to be part of the plans if it wasn't for the Johnson contract, and not that the Johnson contract is anything meaningful. Is it even fully guaranteed if he's cut? I mean, it's probably irrelevant actually in the broader scheme of things. So Cunningham could still beat him out and it's not going to make an impact on the team overall. But it just felt like that signing seemed to signal that the Ravens don't think it's there for Cunningham. And maybe we're just reading too much into it. And the Ravens want to protect their interests with Johnson. They think that he's worth having stick around, and offering him a contract is worth more than the nothing, not doing so, kind of overall.
To answer the earlier question in there, his contract is effectively guaranteed. He's got $985,000 of guaranteed money. So if I were Johnson, I would want that. Yeah. Obviously, you know, in some sense, you might be okay being the practice squad player at that point, but you don't even have to do that, because as soon as you get cut, then you get the 985, some other team picks you up. They, you know, they're either having to pay you practice squad money in addition, or they're paying you. And there may be offset language. So I don't know all of the elements of this, but in his case, it's a, he's got a secure position, I think, with the Ravens. And it probably, the signing of Johnson, obviously that indicated very clearly that Huntley was headed for the door. But what does it tell you about a Malik Cunningham? Does it tell you that he can be the two? Because it seems like Malik Cunningham, I guess, could be the three, but that's exactly how the Ravens got him off of New England's practice squad.
Yeah, especially with the practice squad rule change. I wonder, you know, how ultimately that does affect things. Also, whether or not the Ravens think that Cunningham brings something. I mean, the new kickoff rule, and whether a guy like Cunningham brings something to the team there. Also losing Duvernay, and so needing another potential offensive weapon-ish type also serves to Cunningham's ability. Super interesting to see if Derrick Henry is going to return some of those kicks this year. I think that's just a very interesting discussion for as kind of the season evolves or we get closer to the season, and whether the Ravens are willing to risk his health for some of those impact plays. But, you know, I think Cunningham's spot on the roster might be a little bit more viable depending on what the Ravens do with wide receiver depth as well. I mean, there's not a lot of depth in the room to begin with if they only draft one guy and everybody else that we see coming in from a UDFA perspective is super toolsy. We already saw them not be able to sign Reynolds that came in. Is Gallup a guy? He was guaranteed some money in Dallas. So like, he's not going to need a lot of money. So see a guy that they bring in, but if they don't, Cunningham seems like, you know, that's not a bad place to at least try to carve your spot out on the roster.
Yeah. All right. So let's see. Have we been through your number eight guy as thoroughly as you want to in terms that's of my leaders and anything yep. more? Okay. So he's on my no list. He's a not for the Ravens. And it's not because he's not one of the top 15 quarterbacks in this draft. He obviously is. He might even be one of the top 10. I could certainly see that if you're just rating quarterbacks and are team agnostic, I could see, you know, liking him more than that. But he's not for me, not for the Ravens system. And even with the good point you made earlier about, you know, trying something different when you have a backup quarterback in the game, I would still be hesitant on him. Well, my number eight guy is the ultimate toolsy guy who his combine was so impressive. Joe Milton of Tennessee threw a 70 to 75 yard bomb completion that just seemed to come down out of the stratosphere pretty much and be caught. He overthrew somebody at that distance too. But very toolsy, not ready to go right now, but, you know, we're making this list for the Ravens and we're trying to say, you know, the Ravens obviously do not need a quarterback right away. They do not need a quarterback, we hope, in 25. But, you know, were he to be needed in 25 or 26, say, for some stretch of games, and obviously Lamar Jackson is still going to be a Raven at that point. He's a guy who's had success with a lot of warts at the college level, tremendous velocity. I've got some other things to say, but give you a chance, first of all, to talk about where Joe Milton fits in your rankings.
Yeah, he's next in my rankings at seven. Absolute just toolsy stud in terms of what you're looking at. I mean, I would have zero problems with the Ravens. You know, I was a bit more agnostic in my rankings of kind of where I came down on these as opposed to thinking about them specifically compared to the Ravens. But ultimately, if the Ravens...
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium, 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap. Also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Drafted him, I would have no problem with that. I thought the Ravens should have considered drafting the guy that Tennessee drafted in the fourth round a couple years
Malik
ago.
Willis.
Yeah, Malik Willis. I think that I like this idea of being able to know what you're getting from a mobile quarterback. Obviously, the Ravens were higher on Lamar Jackson than anybody else in the league. So if there are things that they see in a guy like Milton that they want to have around, then I think you take him and you develop him. And if there are opportunities for him to play, and then you trade him and you pull you can pull the ultimate Patriots. This is kind of the inverse of the argument I was making earlier, which is that you have the asset of saying, we know how to develop this kind of guy. If other teams are looking for that kind of guy for their system or looking for a starting quarterback, are willing to trade a second, third, fourth round pick down the road of a guy that you've developed and either has put on, preseason tape or whatever that might be. This is the exact kind of guy that I think fits kind of within the Ravens. There are a couple teams that might be like a little Anthony Richardson-esque in terms of like how toolsy he is. And so like a team like the Colts, I think would be another team that should make similar considerations. Same with the Eagles for a similar, not the same prototype as Hurts, but again, kind of like within system and being able to do some of those things could kind of fit within that mold. So I would have zero problems with the Ravens making this their pick and him being kind of that second or third quarterback in the long run.
A few things we need to talk about with Milton because there's a lot of warts here to go with all the good, but 6'5", 235. He'll be 24. Well, he had turned 24 already, but 24 in March is what I have in my notes here. So he is one of the older quarterbacks, not quite the oldest. There's a couple guys who are at least older than him, even in the top 10 here. He said six seasons of college football between Michigan and Tennessee. Obviously, he had grading into some actual playing time here that finished at Tennessee. Accuracy is an enormous issue. For this guy, definitely has the accuracy of a sawed off shotgun is what the term I usually use for quarterbacks who just, they force their receiver play after play to reach down, reach up, reach back is the worst. Reach up is very bad too. Reach up is deadly because you tip the ball and it can be intercepted. Reach back, the trailing cover guy may get the interception. You want to miss, you usually want to miss forward. He does move around the pocket fairly well and doesn't seem to have the same kind of fear of his feet that other quarterbacks have. Takes hits very well, really plays to his size in that regard. So he can take a big hit. And that's where, by the way, that is where quarterbacks get hurt. If you look at all the big hits Lamar Jackson's taken, Jackson really knows how to go down on a run play or a sack that's being converted to a run play, which is a lot of his sacks. Where he gets hurt, or where he can get hurt, is on quarterback hits. There, where he's still trying to throw the ball, and then usually you're throwing against the weight of that defender, or at least at an angle to it, and you have the chance of really getting hurt there. And that's where I think Milton has probably some inherent injury risk that comes with him.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about guys like Lamar Jackson and Anthony Richardson when they came out of college, which is that they showed these really wild swings in terms of accuracy. I think a big knock, even Lamar was coming out of Louisville, was that his completion percentage was just so low. And there were some people that said, I didn't watch enough of Lamar in college. There's some people said that he was throwing the ball out of bounds more often than others, and that decreased his percentage. But I mean, I remember the Chargers game during, Lamar's rookie year, where he just looking on an 8-yard out and throws the ball into the hash mark 4 feet in front of him, it seemed like. The ball just, I think a lot of fans that remember that game know exactly which play I'm talking about. So you see these guys come into the NFL without the mechanics and without the skill set, from that. It can be coached up, if they have at least something that you're seeing there that are the base of what they need to be able to teach them. You know, it's a question of how coachable he is. And that goes to interview and kind of knowing the coaches that are working with him and all those kind of things that come with it.
Yeah, work ethic is a lot of that. I mean, one of the things that has been so great about Lamar Jackson, and I think we sometimes lose sight of it for how important it was to his development. He did come into the league just a less accurate quarterback. His first camp, you know, he's taking off running all the time on these passing drills. And I'm like, you know, why is he doing this? We know he can run. He doesn't need to just, you know, get rid of the football, throw it. But he's a guy who sought out off-season training and really made it work for him, particularly between 18 and 19. But I think he's continued with the thing because of its success. And he's really evolved as a more effective passer. You know, do I trust Joe Milton to be that way? Well, I'd have to know from the interviews if that really makes sense. Of is he a guy who would stick with that kind of thing? And I probably wouldn't even know then. You definitely cannot trust his quarterback coach at Tennessee. The guy you'd want to talk to is Matt Weiss or one of the other Michigan quarterback coaches and see what he was learning when he was there. And I think Weiss was actually the QB coach for at least 1 year of Milton being there. That would have been like 4 years ago. So Weiss might not have been elevated to that point, but I know he was when he first went to Michigan or shortly thereafter, he became the QB's quarterback, a QB coach there. I got one other beef with Milton, but you had something to say.
Oh, I'd say one thing to the positive for his coaching was for a guy that lost his job to an injury. So he beat Hooker out as a starter a couple of years ago, got hurt, lost his job. And in the environment, the way college football operates today, stayed at the school. That says something to me. You know, we live in an environment, and Bo Nix is a guy, we'll get to him. I'm sure he's still ahead on your list. But like guys that have jumped around to a lot of different places and kind of just had to, either because they wanted to, they had to, it doesn't really matter why. But to see a guy who lost his job to an injury stay at that place, even though he was essentially guaranteed the job afterwards, I still think shows some level of conviction or a little bit of a different mentality than what we might be seeing from, you know, how college football is evolving. And I think all kinds of people have all kinds of different opinions about that. I don't see it as problematic, but I do see that then the guys that stay in programs like that should get feathers in their cap. Like, cause there's a guy like Hook or a guy like Milton could have been mad immediately when he lost his job and wasn't told as soon as you're healthy, you get it back. Right. And left. And not even stuck around because of that.
Here's, I would have take a slight counter on that and say, if I'm Milton and I'm playing at Old Dominion or I'm playing at Connecticut or I'm playing at some school that is not at the top of the top of the Power Five conferences, then I would be probably moving on after an injury to make sure I got the best deal in terms of money and starting opportunity and all that. In Milton's case, he was virtually guaranteed the situation at Tennessee, which is still, you know, a very solid SEC franchise, and you don't get much more visibility than that. So, I mean, I can't credit him for that decision the same way you are now. It's true. You know, he came back and he took a spot that was left by Hooker, and he could have felt bad about it. But I'm trying to wonder at what point was he supposed to say, oh yeah, I'm hurt and I quit because now Hooker's playing well, but Hooker's going to be gone. Okay. Well, okay, I don't quit. You know, I just don't credit him with what you're saying in the same way. But you know, it would have been a bigger test anyway if he's at Old Dominion and he stays there after he gets hurt and comes back. One other thing to say about Milton that I want to make sure I get out, that he's all velocity and no touch. There hasn't been a quarterback like this in a long time, there haven't been any that have been successful in a long time. I'll take you back to a very unsuccessful guy who had to do exactly that, and that's Kyle Bowler. Just has no ability, had no ability in his case, to make the up and down throw. I think Milton is in the same spot now. Now, again, he's so toolsy. Maybe you can teach him to do that. Maybe you can teach him to make those good play action throws, consistently throw over the people in front of him. But it seems like he's a guy who needs a passing lane directly to the receiver. He wants to throw a bullet. He wants to throw a line drive, and he just has really not that interest in showing a touch pass. And I don't really, I can't really blame him too much for what his skill set is right now, because he's not a particularly accurate quarterback. That increases your need to rely on those very direct throws. And so that will hurt him at the NFL level. It's a high percentage of up and down throws. You face a lot of zone, and you better be accurate on those throws between level two and three, because they are the bread and butter for most quarterbacks. And a guy like him is going to be more like maybe what Joe Flacco was early in his career, or Bowler for that matter, working with Mason on an outside, and a hitch and go guy, a guy who can run either of those routes effectively, is going to be his best friend rather than a tight end is for a lot of other quarterbacks.
Joe Flacco was the exact guy, as you were making that description.
Yeah.
I kind of thought also, I mean, there were certainly people, and there were certainly throws and games at times where you were just like, Joe, what are you doing? Like, you're throwing a screen pass to Ray Rice and you throw it at him 30 miles per hour. And of course he's not going to be able to catch that ball. Yeah. Like, what are you thinking? So, you know, hopefully it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see. You know, it feels like the NFL is in a slight evolutionary moment, as these things ebb and flow constantly, where offenses are looking a little bit more for the anticipation and touch guy. And there seems to be a feel right now within the league that, like, that's a, especially within the Shanahan based systems, that those things are like heady touch, you know, anticipation are gaining a little bit more value than big Milton, like 6'5" cannon of an arm types, where, you know, the Jamarcus Russell, Flacco, those kind of eras where it was like big, tall, strong arm guys were the guy. And it was almost unquestionable to have any kind of doubt about those being the most talented guys.
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely a prototype statuesque look over at the top of those, tiny relative defensive lineman that was a big deal back then. And I agree. I don't really see Flacco as having the problem on touch passes that Bowler had. Bowler was just, he was useless without a direct lane to the receiver. Flacco kind of depended on it a little bit with Mason. He depended on the checkdowns a little bit, but Flacco was a play action quarterback at heart, and he went between level two and three a lot in terms of trying to drag that those linebackers in and make them make a false step. Okay, so we're done. That's my number eight guy, who you have at number seven, right? So who's,
that's
right. You already said your number eight guy, that was Austin Reed. So now we're to my number seven guy, right?
That's right.
Okay. The only guy I think is in the middle of this draft, the only guy, because I think Milton is a round five, round six guy. Maybe the Raiders or some team goes up. The Raiders particularly be kind of amusing, because they wouldn't have learned from the Jamarcus Russell era, you know, what the limitations of a quarterback like Milton might be. But, you know, someone will take a chance on him. He's got talent. It's not like, you know, you can't teach his arm strength, certainly. So hopefully you can teach him the other things to actually be a quarterback. But it seems like anything above about round five is probably an overdraft for Milton. The one guy I think who fits into day two somewhere or early day three is Spencer Rattler of South Carolina. And he's been around for so long, been projected for, it seems like, 3 years as a top five pick in the draft. And then he went back to South Carolina, had some real difficulty after leaving Oklahoma, and was not as good. But he's played through a ton of adversity there, by the way. It's absolutely horrible situation in terms of pass blocking at South Carolina. He'll be 24 in September, which, by the way, I think is kind of young given how long we've been hearing his name, because there are a bunch of 24-year-old quarterbacks in this group. Anyway, he made his name as that shotgun spread guy at Oklahoma, just like all the Oklahoma quarterbacks before him, with Baker Mayfield and others have done that. A guy who stood up decently to SEC pressure, given what he faced, I thought, but nonetheless has a lot of questions that go with him.
I think, yeah, to me, the reason he was the one guy I thought that might not be on my list, that would be on your list. I mean, his transition out of Oklahoma and out of the spread system was one that, like, it's, if there's anything that says it's almost more pro style, right? And you hear people talking about Joe Burrow coming out of LSU being pro style. And like, you know, they even said Lamar coming out of Louisville, they played in a more pro style. You think of the SEC and everything that you get with that, right? And it's not just the approaches, I think, from offense, it's also the quality of the defenses, et cetera. And, you know, if Rattler would have been able to come out of school in 2021, you know, out of Oklahoma, he probably would have been a top five pick. And I think that, you know, that's one of these interesting things that without being able to transfer to somewhere else and then see the quality skill set or not skill set, the numbers return that he had when he was in Oklahoma, that seems to be the thing that holds him back. But then also makes you wonder, well, if he can't transition from Oklahoma and a spread offense and kind of being geared up to be able to do that, is he really going to be able to convert at a pro level? You know, his age kind of being combined with that. And then just like really, you know, pedestrian overall. Again, if you're just kind of looking solely at the numbers, you know, especially from touchdown to interception over 2 years in South Carolina, not great. Mm-hmm. Completion percentage, not great. It's not bad. Certainly not as low as what Lamar's was when he was coming out of school. But again, just not where for a guy that had the pedigree of what you wanted, the risk you run of being around for this long is that people feel like they've seen enough of you that your projectability is now gone. And I think that's where I kind of landed with Rattler.
Yeah. You know, that's a very valid point. You know, a guy who's had as much opportunity in college as he has had, and he's had, you know, what, 4 years as a starter or something. He's had a lot of time as a starter throughout his college career. Yeah, there's still a lot of really nice things that you can see in him. And despite not being a threat as a runner, you know, he's had 1.4 yards per carry career. Now, there's always some funny things about the college rushing stats, including sacks and this and that. But I have him for 1.4 yards per carry. I actually need to look at like PFF for that because they divide out those running stats differently. And so I'll have to do that here before we're done. But, you know, he knows when to get rid of the ball under pressure and has done a pretty good job of that with a very consistent time to throw over the last three seasons. That includes time at Oklahoma for 1 year and two more years at South Carolina, where he's like 281, 282, 283 all 3 years. And that tells me that you know, while their adaptability is necessary, he's dealt pretty well, I think, with getting rid of the ball under pressure. Really good up and down touch, which, you know, we've mentioned for several quarterbacks below him was one of their big problems. For him, that's one of his big strengths. So I think he fits very well in a play action offense. I think he fits very well on a team that has good tight ends and likes to keep the ball between the numbers. That could be the Ravens, and that's why I had him higher on my list, or one of the reasons anyway. One of the negatives about Spencer Rattler, and this is incredible given the amount of college time he has, is he's still not really good at reading the closing window. So he focuses too much on differential speed between the cornerback or the other defender. It could be a safety trailing the receiver and not the closing defender from the other side, who's going at a much higher relative speed. So that's where the interceptions occur a lot of the time, and that's where he's definitely at risk there. But also has that Mayfield-esque kind of size about him at 6'2", 11". He doesn't see over the defensive line very easily. So, you know, he definitely has some limitations. I'm not saying it. I'm just saying there's a guy here who already is pretty good at some things about a thrower, and you put him in a little better situation in terms of an offensive line at least, and maybe some receiving talent around him. And I think I would probably project him to be not as good as he was at Oklahoma, but better than he was at South Carolina.
You know, this is one of those interesting things where if Rattler was the exact same guy and you transported him back 12 years ago, then he's still probably a late first round, early second round draft pick. But now quarterback has evolved. So, I mean, and quarterback always mattered before, but it's evolved so much over the last 10 or 15 years to being not just good or not just capable of, like, game manager is now a negative thing. Whereas like during that era, you could be a game manager. And if you were a good under contract, rookie contract game manager for a football team, you could be a winning franchise and even have serious deep playoff run aspirations. Now that is gone. And I think that's the thing that hurts Rattler the most here is not that he couldn't be, I think he could easily be the 22nd best quarterback in the league at his full projectable level. But who wants to pay a first round pick for that these days, right? Like, what? Why is that? And that's kind of where I came down between a guy like Milton versus a guy like Rattler. Which one of those am I going to take? If I'm picking in, even if it's in the second or third round, and I'm not saying Milton should go that early, like I want lottery pick upside out of my quarterback. And maybe it's that I'm overly sensationalized by what I'm getting, but look at the AFC's quarterbacks right now. I mean, even if you took Rattler at his full development, at his maximum projection, he's behind 8 quarterbacks in the AFC. Yeah.
Easily. I see the point.
And so it's just like, where, you know, so how much draft capital do I really want to spend on a guy like this? And so, but there are teams that are built that are better positioned to have a quarterback be like that on their team. I just want a guy that has either shown me better upside statistically overall, shown me progression, shows me projectability. And so, you know, and especially, I mean, I guess the difference being from a Ravens perspective, you almost want the latter, or I'm sorry, the former. You want that conservative, mild, that was kind of what the comfort level was with Huntley. Like, he wasn't going to win you games. It didn't feel like he lost you games. And it felt like you knew exactly what you were getting from Huntley. Now, ultimately that turned to be his downfall, because the other teams, you have the same guy doing that for 4 years and the other team does too. Or the other teams have seen enough on film to know that too. But you could see the Ravens wanting, like, if Rattler were to fall, you know, especially if you view him as a second or third round quarterback, and for whatever reason, drifts into the fifth, you know. But if a front office does, and he drifts into the fifth or sixth round for a team like the Ravens that have got the number of picks they've got, I don't know that I would be, if the Ravens made that pick, I wouldn't be terribly upset, because I would trust them and what their plan was to do so accordingly.
Yeah. Where I think Rattler fits and why he's in the middle, where everybody else falls to one end, is I think he's the only guy you draft in round 3 or potentially in round 4 at some point who you're not going to be so concerned about the draft capital trade-off. And I do understand the upside of Milton. I think your point is excellent, that you need to have a high variance player at quarterback if you're going to have a chance to compete in a conference that has so many great quarterbacks. One of the ways, you know, that you can compete in a conference that has a lot of great quarterbacks is there to be a bunch of injuries. You don't want to hope for that every year, because your own quarterback is susceptible as well. But, you know, the Ravens with the defense they have, you know, might be a team that is better off trying to win in part with that, assuming they have average quarterback luck. They're in a position to do it, whereas a team like Cincinnati or a team like who else would fall into this category? Cincinnati's a really big one. Buffalo probably does not fall into the category of being able to compete with their defense alone to try and win the AFC. But Miami, certainly. But anyway, point being, So anyway, I like the point. I like the notion that a high variance quarterback has more value. I think I understand that. I can't put Milton at all in the same category that it put Rattler. I think Rattler could help you in 2024 potentially if your quarterback goes down. I don't think Milton could do that. Yeah. All right. Well, let's your number 6 guy, I'm guessing, and we'll give away a part of the second part of this show by going through both of our number 6s, which is going to be interesting, because we might have different guys here. We might not. Did you have somebody different? You already had Joe Milton at number 7. You had Austin Reed added in. So Spencer Rattler was my additional guy that was in my top 10. He's out of yours. So now we're going to number 6. Who is your number 6 guy?
This one's going to be moderately controversial, at least based on the way draft charts are kind of being fired off at this point. But for me, it's JJ McCarthy. Okay. I don't see, I mean, he's got the prototypical size. He's the 6'3", you know, quarterback. He has solid, you know, in terms of his quarterback or touchdown to interception ratio at Michigan, obviously super pedigreed program, though, playing with a system, playing with a coach that gets how to run a college football system, knows how to get the most out of his quarterback. I'm expecting to see these kind of numbers out of anybody Jim Harbaugh was coaching in college, and especially with a running game that Michigan had to go along with it. And so obviously projectability matters a lot, and where you want to see some of these guys go, the system and the amount that they ran versus the amount that they threw certainly holds McCarthy back. So you have to lean into the projectability over all of that. But I just didn't see it. In any of the highlights that I watched with McCarthy, just none of it really popped. There's from the other five guys in this class, and I think this is why McCarthy was the one. Like, it's this almost the same analysis about Rattler, about why I view McCarthy last, is that Rattler, same issue. Like, there's no, like, Milton has those wow plays, right? Mm-hmm. And for the other five quarterbacks that we've got in this list that are ahead of him, there are some wow plays. And it just felt like McCarthy was never that guy. And so if I have to pick first, I again want that upside in terms of the guy that I'm looking at. And I think that's the thing that holds McCarthy back. He showed progression over his career, great accuracy in his last year at Michigan, lots of positives and good things. And I think that he should go in that upper echelon of where all these quarterbacks go. He would just be the last one in my preference in these guys.
Okay, so you still a first round pick? End of the first round?
I think
for him?
Still a first round. Yeah, I still think a first round pick.
All right, so I guess we're giving away some of the end of the show, but that's cool. I had McCarthy at number four, and I've got multiple reasons for this, but the size, the frame is there without the bulk on it currently. He only weighs like 219 pounds at the combine, 6'3", so he's the right height for the quarterback. He's also the youngest QB in the draft. He just turned 21. So, if we project some of these guys as athletes when, maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't. And we project some of these guys to be bad because of age. We've got to give McCarthy the other end of this, is even though he's fairly polished because he's played under Harbaugh, he is a guy who is still very young. Now, that said, there are a whole bunch of things that are not good, and there's some other things from a testing standpoint that are utterly fantastic. So I don't think he helps a team run an RPO offense. I don't really believe that, not at the NFL level. He's not a really big, serious run threat himself, which means you force that focus onto the running backs, and obviously that makes him not as effective. You don't get the false reads out of linebackers that you would like to get, probably with a McCarthy. Now, at the upper end, he certainly could be projected into a Brock Purdy, because just about anybody could be projected into a Brock Purdy if they have elite other accuracy and manipulation talents. And McCarthy could be that guy. McCarthy's also bigger than Purdy. McCarthy's also much younger than Purdy. So, there are reasons why he's a first round pick and Purdy was a seven. He does have very average arm strength. And I think we saw that a lot, but you watch the combine, there's noticeable difference in terms of velocity between a McCarthy and a Milton and a Williams, for example, is there. On the other hand, he had a 4.23 20-yard shuttle, and he had a three cone of 6.82. I want to put the three cone in context here. One pass rusher that he could face if he goes to the NFC North is Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson was like 6.67 on the three cone. It's a historic number among edge rushers, even though edge rushers are nimble. Cougars, Panthers, whatever you want to call them, in terms of hopping on the quarterback, and that 6.82 number would look pretty good on a slot cornerback. I mean, that's just an outstanding three cone, and you just do not see that out of a quarterback very often. It's just off the scale. Accuracy is what he does. That's the business he's in. Good touch throws. He needs to have that with the kind of velocity he has, because there is a fairly substantial thing. I think, you look at the upside and you look where he is, and I think he's going to be a first round pick. He's not number one overall, so you're only spending a quarter of the draft capital you would on a Joe Burrow, but I think he gives you more than that back in terms of his potential to be Burrow-esque and end up being that kind of a quarterback who could do a lot of that. Always the case, what you want, one of the things I look for in quarterbacks who have average velocity is, are they really checking the front side of that window regularly? And he's a guy who had some mistakes there. So that's got to be coached up. And you know what? At 21, I hope there are a couple of things that he has to be coached up on, because if he's completely coached up, we've seen every little ounce of ability is the wrong thing. Every little last advantage is already played out on the field at Michigan. That would be a bad thing.
Yeah, I think my issue You're right about the age piece in particular. I think we've maligned a few of these guys already. And it's interesting kind of like with the COVID overlap during these eras of college, how old these guys are. We knew that there was going to be a draft class, that this was the kind of thing that happened this way. So it is interesting that you got McCarthy as the contrast as the younger player. There's definitely some extra value in that as a team when you're looking at kind of what these windows look like, what that means, especially for the prototype he is. You know, if you can get him to be a starting quarterback by the time he's 23 compared to some of these other guys, you know, the extra years on those contracts and the extra value of what you think you're getting out of that is there. I just, you know, we've been hearing his name going. I think he's kind of catching part of the inverse of skyrocketing up draft boards as making me want to push him down, because I don't think he reaches, like, just in kind of like the broader quality of a guy I would spend a fifth round pick on. This is not the guy.
Okay, so this is not the guy you'd try and spend a top 10 pick on, which may be where he goes, by the way. He may well go in the top 10.
Yeah. I think he's going to. Yeah.
I had a point I want to make, but I'll let that go. We need to cut it off here at five quarterbacks. We're going to come back and do the top five on our list going forward. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. And we'll start with your number six guy, I guess, when we come back. And he'll obviously be someone who's in my top five. Jordan, always a pleasure to do these shows with you. Fantastic conversation. I think what you bring to this in terms of the intellectual discussion, looking at progression of quarterbacks, I just really appreciate having someone like you to talk to about this. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Ken. You can find me at Raven Sit Room on Twitter. You know, Gabe at Gabe Fergie, Gabe, my co-host from the Situation Room. We're always talking football there, trying to squeeze in a little Orioles these days as well. Love to chat kind of Baltimore sports.
Okay. Hopefully we have both of you guys on the draft panel, at least for some of the draft this coming year, but the watch party is a lot of fun. Other folks out there, if you'd like to join the watch party, we're offering kind of a rotating panelist role this year. Give me some notions on what you think and where you might like to be involved, whether it's the probably two or three where I would like to open mic eyes some of these seats, have people rotate on for questions and whatnot. But if you'd like to be a panelist, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter for days two and three in particular. Jordan, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. Obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. The platform connects you with trusted experts to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vanta. For a limited time, get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/simplify. That's VANTA.com/simplify for $1,000 off.